This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Eric Hernandez. Eric has been with Lien Associates in the commercial real estate division since 2000 and research prior to that since 1994. He specializes in industrial real estate, and we've had Eric on a number of times before, and he's actually our go-to person for the commercial world. Eric, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
We sort of just touched on something that's starting to occur. In the afternoon, I may say, you know what, I'm going to get some groceries, and instead of driving to State of Brothers, I put an order in to Amazon Fresh, and it shows up before I'm eating breakfast tomorrow morning. And in and of itself, it may seem insignificant, except for if a lot of people do that, there may not be a reason to have Stater Brothers there or any other market in the same quantity that currently exists. And I guess you start thinking about the ramifications of that, because usually at the end of that core store, there's cleaners and there's miscellaneous other stores that would no longer survive if the grocery store wasn't there. So do you see that type of thing starting to, you know, in the next 10 years, do you see that playing out in an increasing fashion?
It'll be a fascinating story to watch unfold. It's happening right before our very eyes, and I don't think it'll take 10 years to play out. I mean, I think we're in the second or third inning of that already. You know, if you remember the dot-com bubble, there were actually companies doing door-to-door or you know, to-your-door delivery service way back then. There was a company called Cosmo.com. I don't remember if you ever heard of it. I remember it. It never made it to the Inland Empire, but it was very popular in highly urbanized or densely populated areas like Manhattan or certainly out in the Valley. One of my good friends loved it. He was in Burbank at the time. But, you know, those companies, the technology was just not quite there. Now we're talking, you know, 15, 16 years ago.
Right.
But the idea was there. And sometimes the ideas are ahead of, you know, the technology's ability to make it happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a great article I read, I think it was today or last night, about Reed Hastings, the founder of Netflix.
Okay.
And he was talking about, you know, what his idea was to this mathematical equation, right, to start the company about, and it had to do about bandwidth. And they asked the class, what was the bandwidth of a station wagon full of VHS tapes, you know, driving down the road, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you think of those VHS tapes as, you know, if they were digitized, and you know, how can you get them out? And they thought, well, what's the bandwidth if you fill that full of DVDs, right, at 4 to 5 gigabytes a piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that at that time that the post office was a very efficient, high bandwidth way to deliver movies to people. The mechanism at the time was DVDs, right?
Right.
But I think in his mind, he had always thought that eventually the technology would catch up with where he wanted to be. And then they started doing streaming in, I believe, 2007. I think the number was they've now got 100 million subscribers for the streaming service, and I think they're down to 5 million subscribers for DVDs.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, the idea sometimes is way ahead of where the technology is. And so now here we are again, you know, to get back to your point about, you know, Amazon Fresh and some of these other companies that can deliver groceries to you same day or next day. And it's amazing the convenience and the speed and the, you know, the quality of the product and the competitiveness of the price. And what does that do to the corner grocery store?
Yeah, I mean, it's that term displacement. It just seems like that's going to inevitably hit more and more pockets of the commercial real estate for sure. I had an interesting experience. You know, I had heard of Uber from my son, Aaron, who's really up on all the tech stuff, but I hadn't had it in practice yet. I was invited to go back to Washington, D.C. and speak in front of Fannie Mae. And so we had arranged a hotel that turned out to be full. So they sent me to a neighboring property, which I got in, sat on the bed, and within 2 minutes got bit by 2 bed bugs.
Oh.
So I said, okay, well, that isn't going to work. So I called Aaron up. I said, yeah, you got to get me into a better hotel. And I would say I had really, when I walked in the room, I hung up my clothes. I sat on the bed. 2 minutes later, I called Aaron. I didn't really have time to wrap up my stuff. And Aaron sends me an email or a text and says, okay, here's your new hotel. And I'm having Uber pick you up. Okay. And then the door knocks on my hotel. And I answered it and he goes, I'm ready to go. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. When I left, Aaron was not around and I didn't have the Uber app. So I had to wait for a cab at the same hotel. While I was waiting for the cab, 3 people got picked up by Uber drivers in front of me.
Yeah.
And you just go, wow, no wonder that's displacing cabs. It's more efficient.
So Uber could not have existed until we had cell phones that had the GPS technology and the internet tied in to talk to each other with that communication infrastructure, right?
And what's interesting is they don't own anything.
That's right.
Yet.
That's right.
Now, yet, because apparently, aren't they trying to figure out how to do self-driving Uber cars?
I keep reading about that. I don't know if I would ever get into one yet. I think if I knew all the cars drove themselves, I might feel a little safer. It's not the Uber car that I maybe don't trust. It's the other cars on the road that aren't autonomous.
Yeah. Well, do you know the name Sean O'Toole?
Yes.
Okay. He's a smart guy. He's a friend of mine. And I, 5 years ago plus, maybe, we're in the limo going to our charity event at the Nixon Library. 5 years ago at least. And he's talking to me about self-driving cars. And I said the same thing you did. I said, oh, God, I can't wait till I'm next to one of those. He said, well, to be honest with you, they'll do better than you. And I said, well, how's that possible? He said, inside that car will be a computer that if you played 100 games in a row of rock, paper, scissor, you would lose 100% of the time because it picks up your impulse on what you're going to do. It literally does. And with the invention of the cloud, what happens is all of these self-driving cars are connected and have all the same memories shared at the same time. So if a self-driving car is following a truck that has something fall off of it, it literally registers that memory and shares it with every other self-driving car, and they have the same experience without having the experience.
Yeah.
That's astonishing.
It's amazing. Yeah. Some of these things that seem like they're so futuristic, they're here.
They're here.
It'll be fascinating to see what we're talking about, 5 to 7 years from now.
Exactly.
Right? It's in the glimmer of someone, sitting in their basement or their parents' garage or in their dorm room in college, or someone that watched Shark Tank and had an idea to go start their own company. I mean, it could be anybody. Age is not a limiter,
No.
It really isn't anymore.
Well, Sean,
your imagination.
Sean O'Toole bought for his 10-year-old son a 3D printer, a state-of-the-art 3D printer when he was 10, for that very reason, so he could start playing around, starting to be entrepreneurial,
Yeah.
So that's the future. I had an interesting experience, and this, you talked about education, because here we have over $1 trillion debt of college in an era where you could literally have the best teacher of a subject teach 1 million or 10 million people at the same time. And I think that is coming. I'll share with you something. I went to Pacifica High School, and before that went to a junior high. So I'm on a plane next to a guy, just started up a conversation. He has a master's degree. And then it turned out we went to the same high school and then the same junior high. So he's got all the schooling. I said, I'm just curious. Who's your all-time favorite teacher? He said, hands down, Beglinger, 8th grade civics. I said, mine too. And it's interesting that all the years of college that he went to and it's the same teacher. And if Beglinger taught you civics, you got an A. It was that simple. He had to explain to the principal every year why every one of his students got an A in his class, including a final test that was not like multiple choice. It was handwritten, and if you misspelled it, you got half the off the question wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's possible to have the best teacher teach something.
I think we're at the beginning stages of that. You know, there's a lot of social structure that we'll have to get figured out.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that is something. You have these online universities right now, or with the Khan Academy and other places like that. That, I mean, they have, I mean, you know, Ivy League caliber courses online that you can get into, and it's fascinating. I'm kind of learning about it myself. My oldest son is in eighth grade, and as a joke, I got him an SAT prep test book for Christmas.
Okay.
And a UCLA jacket.
Okay. Well, I guess that's his future, huh? You're planting some seeds.
Well, he's in eighth grade. He'll be in high school next year, right?
Yeah.
And he's there. I'm four. You know, all my boys are bright. And, you know, you think about what would college look like in 4 years or 8 years or 10 years. And, I mean, I think about some of the classes I took when I was at UCR, and UCR being a smaller campus, you know, we had much smaller class sizes than a lot of friends of mine that went to, you know, much larger schools. But I even remember some lecture halls that maybe had 200, 300 students, like, you know, economics 101, you know, the underclass stuff. I could have watched a YouTube video and learned just as much or really more, because if I was tired from being out the night before,
right,
you know, I could have paused it and taken a nap and then woken up and hit play, and I wouldn't have missed anything.
Yeah, and think of the expense that would be not incurred if you could do that.
And if you could watch it from, you know, one of the best teachers, you know, on the planet.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. That's the thing. Like my great mentor from my life in business is Jim Rohn. Jim Rohn is no longer here, but he can still teach me every day, because I can walk around and drive around with his CD in there. You could have Beglinger, who's probably no longer with us, he could still be teaching civics, you know, because he was just an unusual guy that made it live. Every teacher there, you know, every subject has that teacher where it's just like, oh my God, this guy makes this stuff exciting to learn. Well, there's no point not letting them teach most of the people.
If you ask anybody that question, they'll hopefully have a few answers. I remember mine would have been Mr. DeGroff, right? He taught, you know, he was speech and debate for me, and then also, you know, civics, you know, for the class you have to take when you're a senior. He taught economics and history and some of the classes too. But yeah, he was one of my favorites. And he's no longer with us either.
Yeah. You know? And you just think, okay, it's a shame that passion wasn't captured somehow, but they'll be the next person, you know, but eventually we'll start to do that. Another thing Sean said probably years ago too, he says, the biggest problem is that we have to figure out how to have society where 40 or 50% of the people no longer need to work. And that's an amazing statement that I start to think about and go, that could very well be true. One of the best presentations I've ever seen in my life, there was a guy that was talking about the changes coming due to solar, and he opened with a street scene in 1899 in New York, and he says, can you see a car? And they were all horse-drawn carriages, and there was one car, you could barely make it out. 10 years later, same street scene, he said, can you find a horse? 10 years later,
10 years.
Complete change, all cars. And he said, that's what's about to happen with solar and electric cars. He said, the only reason you wouldn't own an electric car is because they were prohibitive in price.
Right.
And now, starting the end of this year, you have a $35,000 electric car that has less than 30 parts that's guaranteed for life, and that you don't have to have gas in it for the rest of the time you own it. And all of a sudden you go, okay, well, that makes economic sense.
Right, right. I'd have one of those.
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, I just listened to this and I started talking to people, and, you know, I got to tell you, at least three people in the first 2 days said, yeah, I have one on order.
Yeah, my sister, my brother-in-law, I believe, has a deposit on one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like the first couple of days they signed up, and they're all excited. And dude, that's a pretty nice price point, and they're nice cars.
Well, that's the thing, especially, you know, when you start thinking about what happens afterwards, you get to pass by all the gas places forever. That's pretty astonishing.
Guaranteed for life. Yeah, we're on the cusp of a lot of things. Actually, I'd like to learn more about the study you heard from Sean or wherever you saw it about the idea of 40 or 50% of the people not needing to work, right?
Well, I don't know if you saw Bill Gates. He was talking about taxing robotics as a laborer.
So you tax the companies that have robots?
Literally, the labor they provide, tax it just as if they were a worker.
Huh.
So there's revenue that isn't ceasing.
Well, it's not tied to payroll taxes, right? How do you generate revenue if there's no payroll taxes?
I think that he was trying to say there should be that.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, that's one of the biggest sources of revenue.
Yeah, you're displacing that. So there's a lot of changes.
If you have robots, farming the fields and making our food and drones delivering it all to our house.
Yeah.
You don't have to go anywhere except watch Netflix.
Yeah, and virtual reality. I mean, I haven't really been up on this stuff. So this year I went to two major shows that were 3D printing, virtual reality, robotics, and just fascinating stuff, way over my head. But I was just fascinated to glimpse that world and see what is possible. You know, they're printing buildings out of, they're 3D printing real estate. And you're just going, okay, that's just hard for me to comprehend.
Yeah, there's a certain scale at which you've got to have these giant machines, to put together something like that. But what I have seen that was pretty interesting is, instead of thinking of it as one giant structure that you've got to build, they're breaking them down into much smaller pieces, almost like a Lego playset, right?
Yeah.
Where you make all the smaller pieces, and you just take them out to the field and assemble it all together pretty quickly. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch what happens over the next 10 years with the convergence of some of these technologies and we're seeing it right now, of course, on the real estate side. With the amount of industrial real estate that we've seen built, it's really changed the office market in the Inland Empire. That's for sure.
Well, it's funny. Each of these segments, when you look at this report that I had mentioned that talked about the rigorous financing requirements coming, also talked about the different levels, price journey of different product types. And so you had storage units doing very well and industrial doing very well. And then you had a losing segment of hotels. And that was because of Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
That took a bite out of that. And so almost all the other segments have something that's taking from them. So malls have online shopping, hotels have Airbnb. The industrial space seems to be the beneficiary of all of those changes.
Industrial real estate is probably one of the easiest asset classes that you can repurpose for a different use. That's one thing that I've always enjoyed working with industrial real estate is you can have, one day you can have a warehouse, that company moves out. The next company that moves in, they might be a manufacturer or some type of value add company, a food company, and they can repurpose that space to make something or do something different than the previous occupant. That's a lot harder to do when, 100 circuit cities all go empty at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a lot more difficult because each shopping center has its own unique things. I know up here in Rancho Cucamonga, the old Circuit City went empty, and then Best Buy took it over. But then Best Buy vacated their old spot, and it took, I think, 2 or 3 years before the old Best Buy spot backfilled, right? It wound up being a food market and a party city. They divided it, so it's... it takes time to repurpose retail and certainly office buildings. Office buildings are very specialized. Think of a high-rise office building. When a company moves out, they've got to go in and completely rebuild the space plan from scratch. It's a very expensive proposition to do. You've not really seen that many high-rise office buildings get built in this cycle, certainly in the Inland Empire.
No, not even high-rise. The commercial building that I bought now 6 years ago has had neighboring properties. I mean, it was like a condo project. So there's mm-hmm. every building has 4,000 square foot condos, basically. We haven't had a neighbor until last month for the entire 6 years.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, I think a lot of cities went back and looked at how do they enhance their industrial real estate in their cities. And so, for example, there was a great article a few months back in the Daily Bulletin about what happened at the I-10 freeway and Vineyard at the entrance to the airport there on the north side of the 10 freeway where the Meredith Center has been built out, where that giant million-square-foot QVC warehouse has gone in.
Right.
You probably noticed it on the freeway. I'm sure your listeners have. So that project was, you know, over 200 acres of land was planned for mid-rise, high-rise office buildings, kind of like a Century City East.
Okay.
It'd be built there, and it was a master plan, and it had been sitting on the books for literally decades. And the city finally realized that that just was never going to happen, or if it did, it might be beyond any of our lifetimes.
Yeah, as far as you being used.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a need, you know, for you know, the cities and for the area to provide jobs to people today. And that opportunity came along to repurpose that center, and that's what they decided to do. And it's going to create a lot of jobs over there, different jobs than maybe what the original plan was, but jobs.
Yeah. Speaking of repurposing, do we have any repurposing of buildings to the use of marijuana?
I've heard that that's happening. There are a couple of cities that are trying to be the first to figure that out. I don't think anybody's quite figured that out yet. I'm not an expert on that.
Well, you know what's
by any means.
In the desert, in Palm Springs area, or Palm Desert,
yeah,
there's an investor we have that's involved in one major project there. Everything, and it's a lot of square footage, at least I thought it was. It's not the kind of building you're talking about, you know, where it's a million square feet, but it's, to me, they were big buildings. They were all being rented by the marijuana industry, pre-rented. They're not even constructed yet. And he's got them rented for several dollars a foot.
Wow.
Now, what's interesting about that is that that could be subject to a policy change, which is pretty scary.
Yeah, if the winds have changed, you know, it'll be interesting to watch. I think Upland, I believe, I live in Rancho. I believe Rancho passed something that basically said not in our town.
Wow.
But there are other cities out here that have had, you know, ballot initiatives or local, you know, people or citizens put together groups to maybe see if they could figure that out. I believe the city of Adelanto zoned a particular area up in the high desert for it. And when that happened, there was an article last year, I believe, in the Sun or the Daily Bulletin, and the land prices just shot to the roof.
Yeah.
In fact, when someone told me about it, I actually didn't believe them. When they first told me about it, I said, what? When they told me these numbers, and I started digging in and talking to some friends up there, and sure enough, proven wrong. I'm not right all the time. And I was blown away at what had happened up there in a short period of time.
Yeah, that's just a whole different level of everything. Probably rent, you know, be the driver. You know, what can you pay for dirt? Well, it depends on how much you can get for the square footage of the space.
Yeah, that'll definitely be an interesting segment to see what happens with it, because it goes into effect, I think, in January, right?
Yeah. So there's being a lot of money spent on the assumption that that's going to still be in existence when they get there, which is a little scary.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch and see what happens.
Eric, we're out of time. Thank you for the update of the commercial world for us. We've been speaking with Eric Hernandez. And can I give your phone number out?
Absolutely. In fact, I'll give you probably the best line to use would be 909-373-2707.
Okay. All right, Eric. I guess we're probably speaking together this year sometime in front of the appraisals.
Possibly. People. Yeah, I haven't spoken the last few years. I had passed the baton to another partner in my office here. So
okay.
If I'm not speaking this year, I'll definitely come and see what you have to say. I'm always interested to see what you have to say.
All right, Eric. Thanks a lot. We'll see
you. You bet.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.